This is WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Another cold day, January 24th, 2014, here in Dearborn and most of Michigan. Be careful out there. Cover up as much as you can and watch your driving, too. It's still a little icy with the snow down there. My name is Jay Koronick. I'm station advisor at WHFR, as well as the host of the show, along with other prominent people from our staff, such as Dennis Reimars, our WHFR news director. Welcome, Dennis.
Dun, dun, dun. Hi, how are you?
Good. You didn't get down to the auto show this week.
I did not.
Not yet.
Busy bee with work, and of course, we're like a weather station, and when the weather gets rough, we have to make sure everybody knows, and they have to toe the line and get their cars out of the road. You know, that's my job.
Well, there you go. Okay. that's important. This is our, traditionally, our auto show edition of the new WHFR Journal, Local News and Alternative Views. I actually physically did go down there this week, and I had a little different experience from last year. And we're going to feature the story in depth and a lot of car questions from Dennis, too, and comments from me about the show and not just what I like, but what's happening with the business, too. Cars are so important to Detroit. They always have been, and they still are, because our metro transit system isn't so hot. I had a people mover experience this time.
Did you really?
Yes. No. I got moved by the people mover.
It's been shut down a lot lately, too, because of weather, so you're lucky.
Well, it was, besides freezing cold, whenever the doors would open to let other people in at the different stations, it was creaking.
Oh.
You know, like they need a little oil, but even oil in this weather probably is not going to be very viscous, as they say. So as a mention up front here, if you want to attend the North American International Auto Show, it's a Detroit auto show, for gosh sakes. This is North American International.
It's international stuff, for the people from, like, France.
Well, I know, and but they'd still come if it was only the Detroit auto show.
Sure.
And nonetheless, the hours remaining, it's obviously going to be there today, Friday, the 24th, and tomorrow, the 25th, and Sunday, the 26th. However, today, the hours are 9 a.m. to 10 p.m., but you can't get in after 9 p.m. at night, so an hour before closing. And that's the same as on Saturday, 9 a.m. in the morning till 10 at night, but you have to get admitted at least by 9 p.m. And I think it, depending on what you want to see and do and how many cars you want to jump into and how long the lines are for that, you probably want to allow 2 hours to see the auto show. Just depends on how involved you get, but just walking around probably takes 45 minutes, even if you didn't stop at all. So plan ahead. Also, Sunday, 9 a.m. start again, but they do close early on Sunday. I guess they have to move all the cars out by Monday morning. I don't know, but 7 p.m. closing, which means you have to get there by 6 p.m. on Sunday. Information about tickets, well, in person, it's $13, regular price for an adult. Seniors and children between 7 and 12 of age are only $7.
That's good.
That's what I went for, that senior thing. By the way, they don't check IDs, so if you look a little bit aged, or you want to toss some talcum powder on your hair or something,
there you go, like I need it.
They probably won't check. Just ask for the senior ticket.
So $7. And under are free?
That's correct. That was the other category, 6 and under.
They have
free
group discounts, too, if you have like 30 people.
I should also mention, for people that need special access, like if you're in a wheelchair or, I don't know, maybe even a cane, using a cane or double
blind,
canes,
maybe,
or whatever.
A dog.
Yeah, you can. Sure. Well, if you have a disability, they don't specify what kind, you can get in 1 hour earlier every day. So you could actually get in at 8 a.m. Wow.
Okay.
So I assume they would let someone who is with you in with you earlier? I mean, someone who's pushing the wheelchair? Or?
So if I have talcum powder in my hair and I walk with a limp and maybe my wife is helping me, I can get in at 8 a.m. for $7.
You got it.
All right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good. I like that.
Good combo there.
Yeah.
Yeah, he plans ahead.
I'm going for the multi-discount.
So in the second half of the show, we'll get into that. We have news here. Oh, yeah, things happening in this area. It's hard to believe, but yes, it's true. And so auto show will be the second half of this hour. Dearborn Press and Guide from last Sunday. Level of Dearborn City Services, according to Mayor Riley, could hinge on personal property tax issue. And just to keep that straight for you, that is not a new tax in Dearborn. I have to say that a few candidates were starting to cast aspersions that Dearborn will be broke, candidates for city council as a campaigner. Dearborn's going to be out of money in a couple of years, and the property taxes won't be kicking in, and maybe the personal property tax, we won't get any money to pay for what we're going to lose this year. Even though Governor Snyder has said, I'll work out some way to get that money back to you, sort of, maybe not all of it, but that's all he said. So O'Reilly's bringing up that personal property tax is not personal, really. It's on businesses. It's on the furniture, if you will, inside of official businesses in Dearborn. So like Ford Motor Company, they get a lot of furniture. Okay. They have a lot of supplies. And there is... until this year anyway, a state tax on that, which sends the money directly back to the cities. And Dearborn really loved that tax for many, many years because of Ford being a very big business. And so this personal property tax really helped the city out a lot. It's gone, folks. Republican legislature, Republican governor have taken it away. Bye-bye. Now, money coming from the state, first of all, to the cities has been decreased too. Revenue sharing, or whatever they call it. But this is personal property tax will be totally gone. And so now, what is the city going to do?
Now, remember, this was proposed a while ago. I'm going to say maybe a year ago. And you spoke directly with Mayor O'Reilly about it, and you asked him that same question. What are we going to do? And he said, I don't know.
That's
I don't think we're any closer to an answer now.
Well, there is a relief here. O'Reilly, in this article, last Sunday's Press and Guide, said that relief could come August 5th this year.
Beautiful.
August 5th, that's the primary election date. Okay. Is that after homecoming, or do we have to wait for homecoming?
Yeah, it'll be the Tuesday after homecoming.
So 4th? Yes, so homecoming will be 1st through 3rd.
1st through 3rd, yes.
Well, Friday through Sunday. So so the first Tuesday after homecoming, folks, Dearborn homecoming, in the primary, voters statewide, it says, will likely vote on a Headley Amendment override, which would allow the personal property tax to continue. Now, there also will be a general election November 4th that will include elections for state offices, including governor, senator, and the House of Representatives. Because of gerrymandering, though, because of the way the Republicans drew the lines of the district, it's very unlikely, even if everybody and a majority of people in the state want to see Democrats in, they probably won't get in. You say, well, how is that possible? How is that possible, you say? Because the districts are drawn in a very scientific way so that the majority, even just 2 or 3 or 4%, is always Republican voters. They know where they live. Okay? This is done with clinical precision now by computers. And national experts come in when Republicans want to gerrymander and design these unbelievably stupidly arranged districts. Dearborn's got the only logical one, which is Dearborn is pretty much represented by one representative. He's the Dearborn representative. But everybody else, oh, my God. I mean, John Dingell, he had some people in his district in Trenton and some out in Ann Arbor, and then they changed that again. They keep trying to find a district where a majority will not vote for him. It hasn't happened yet. But they keep gerrymandering. Well, they've been very successful with other people, though, not a big name like Dingell. And so, you know, the only relief for the city that would keep us from going to another kind of city tax of some sort that we impose on ourselves, and this is my opinion, And what's that qualifier,
Well,
Dennis?
The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of anyone here at the college.
No, but I hope so. But seriously, there might have to be an income tax on people in Dearborn. And a lot of people wanted O'Reilly and other elected council people running for office in Dearborn to say, I'm totally against an income tax ever in Dearborn. Of course, income tax is what? It's a graduated tax, which means the rich would pay... well, doesn't it be graduate? No, income tax has to be the same percent for everybody.
Right.
Yeah, but it's 1% at least for everybody that would come off everybody's income. In terms of dollars, of course, that's more dollars per person for people that make more money than actual dollars for people that make less money. But it's still the same 1%. And so I'm not saying it's going to happen. But if there's no other choice, if there's no relief from declining state revenue sharing, and if the property personal property tax is not eliminated, we're gonna be in a lot of trouble here. I personally don't understand why personal property taxes have to be eliminated completely for all of the businesses in Michigan. I don't think it's unfair to pay on the stuff they got. They got a lot of expensive stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, they with their profits they can buy fantastic computer systems, and that would be personal property. And you know. Although if it's hardwired server, I don't know if that's considered. I mean, how mobile does it have to be? Like a chair and a table, you can move around, but a big time computer.
Why not?
Yeah, it's.
I mean, it would be the same as a lift or a hoist in a garage. I mean, that's property.
I don't know, but I'm just saying that O'Reilly pointed this out, and you should circle the date there, August 5th, the primary election, and he says it's likely. So I don't think it's on the ballot yet, or they can't announce the ballot yet. They can't announce, but somebody has done a petition already, and some group is going to try to get that petition through. Would O'Reilly and all the mayors of all the cities in Michigan be in favor of that passing? Of course they would.
Sure.
They
need the money.
Especially Dearborn. We're going to lose a major, major chunk of our budget that we've been counting on if we don't get any answer. And, of course, if Governor Snyder comes out before that, and he absolutely, totally says, we're going to make up that money in this other way. It's definitely going to happen. Then, of course, we don't need to vote for that. But I've thought the Hendley Amendment was a dangerous, a horrible thing for years. And I know a few of you don't want to pay any new taxes. And Hendley theoretically kept you from paying taxes in certain ways. But in every situation, in Dearborn Heights.
Dearborn Heights is a great
example. They actually passed a law, the voters did, saying, Hendley can't take effect in some situation.
But they were in desperate need of that. I mean,
right. The city would go under, and that's why Hendley is not totally a sort of a wonderful, perfect sort of thing. Because a lot of cities like Dearborn Heights, they had no choice but to go to the polls and vote for exclusion from the Hendley Amendment.
But the voters had to, the residents, the people actually paying the money had to say, yes. Hey, it's cool to do this.
Yes, they absolutely did because they saw the need for those monies. And just like in this situation, we need to, in Dearborn, depending on how the ballot issue is written, we want to override the Hendley Amendment, which would allow the personal property tax to continue in Dearborn, or we're going to have to go for some other taxes in Dearborn somehow, raise something, whether it's property tax, income tax. I doubt they're going to go to an additional sales tax in Dearborn. That would seem a little crazy, but that sometimes happens in places like New York City and places where a lot of tourists.
I know. I used to live there.
Tourists are willing to pay the extra city tax just because, well, they're not paying any of their taxes, but they're burdening the transit system and lighting cleanup of the city. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of tourists always there, and they don't pay any taxes, except when they're there, they pay these extra city taxes. Of course, everybody living in the city has to pay those taxes.
Right.
But New York, a lot of people would be glad to pay it, rich people who have the money to live in New York.
But there's taxes that you're taxed if you work in the city, even though you don't live there. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, that income tax.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
If you make your money in the city, if that's where you go to work.
Exactly.
You know, your business is in the city, even if you're using your computer for your work, then you will pay the city income tax.
I lived in Ridgefield, Connecticut.
Whether you drive in or not.
And commuted to 60 Hudson Street, downtown Manhattan, and I did. I paid a hefty income tax.
Yep.
But Connecticut, I didn't.
Well, usually, It's what people are willing to put up with in those situations. If you're a big time tourist and you're spending $300 a night for a hotel room, a couple more percent on what you buy is not a big deal.
I was 21. So. I didn't know any better.
Yeah.
I lived there.
Well, there you go.
All right.
Does there no taxes in South Lyon?
No. Well, no. No income tax in South Lyon.
Well, okay. Yeah.
So
property tax is probably not too bad either.
That's why I moved there.
Though. Yeah, well. You just like the sounds of the birds.
No, I love being able to take my dog for a long walk, not on his leash, and not worry about people or, you know.
Okay, dog walker.
Yeah, all right. Oh, big time.
So anyway, that's the story on personal property tax. I do not think that has to do with any new tax that City Council is considering. We've mentioned this before. It's just the misnomer is it's called personal property tax. It sounds like individuals would have to pay it.
Talk about poorly named.
It's businesses. It's businesses. In other places in the world, like in England, you actually pay an extra tax based on how many televisions you have.
Really?
And where does that money go? It's about $150 a year per TV.
Yeah.
And I understand from the WOW cable guy who came to my house to do a repair the other way. Oh, most people have 4 or 5 TVs.
In America.
In America, sure. In the same house. Yeah. Well, they're not paying that British tax for
That's
it.
Right.
You know, or maybe they wouldn't consider so many TVs. But what does it go to? It goes to the BBC.
Yep.
Well, it's not all the money that the BBC needs, but it's a solid government, which means politics-free money that they get. Although government there, because of certain comments about that Iraq war and so on, the Parliament in England is reconsidering giving them no strings attached property taxes anymore on people's TVs.
Really?
Because they think, oh, you're irresponsible or you're attacking government. We can't have that.
Sounds like a form of censorship to me.
Well, of course. Well, that's what the U.S. government has been doing with public broadcasting. And now the funding for WDET in Detroit and Channel 56 is down to less than 7% of their budget. It was up, I think, around 30% at one point in the good old days. So, you know, they're on hard times, public broadcasting. And we're not... We're on a we're just barely hanging on ourselves for in terms of budget. You say, well, you're at Henry Ford Community College; they paid the bills. No, they don't. They give us a small stipend, which is less than a third of the money we need to stay on the air.
But we're very grateful for that.
Oh, we are very absolutely grateful. Oh my God, it's like the personal property tax going away. We would really be it'd be impossible for us to continue without that little stipend.
And that's right.
Even the 7% to public broadcasting, those stations are praying it doesn't go lower. But the Republicans have stated, those longtime Republicans in Congress, that it's going to go down to nothing pretty soon.
Just to segue into this, so you're talking about August 5th as being the, voters get to look at that. We also have a next round of millage renewals, according to Bob Oliver from the Dearborn Press, or I'm sorry, the Times Herald, wrote this article. This came out of, this was, actually it's dated last, on the 20th, January 20th. Mm-hmm. The Dearborn Public Schools Board of Education will spend the next few weeks considering when to place the issue of renewing two expiring millages before local voters. Mm-hmm. The two millages, the first of which is a hold harmless of 6.17 mils, and the second a non-homestead of 18 mils, are set to expire in June 2015, meaning that the DPS needs to get voter approval to renew them before next summer. The only two options before the district to ensure that they won't see a lapse in funds generated by the millages are to place it on either the August primary or November general election ballots. Did we go through something similar with this with the when they were debating upon whether to the bond issue? They were debating on whether to put it in August or November. And at the very, very end of this article, and as Jay always says, go to the very, very end, they said that it's very important. The trustees need to keep in mind that if they wait until November instead of August, the proposals are rejected by voters, they would not have another opportunity to get the mills before they expire. And these mills equal 22% of their budget. This is not small change.
Yeah, I think it's because the state of Michigan now, again, the Republican legislature and governor, they want all school millages to be in the November election.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where, of course, more people usually vote. So therefore, it would be more of a Democratic decision, if you will. I mean, in terms of getting more people to express their opinion.
On the surface, it would seem that would be, but that's not necessarily the case.
No, because in November, you're voting for people, and what's the usual hue and cry? Do you like Do you like the situation today? Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago?
Exactly.
And so in November, most people, for some reason, have a please, no new tax mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a blanket
it's
mindset.
It's a knee-jerk reaction, sure.
Well, it's a total knee-jerk reaction. I think a lot of people with jerky knees. But it's just because of all the campaigning that's going on, one of the buzzwords is always no new taxes, mm-hmm. lower taxes. I won't give you any new taxes. And so it's in people's heads that they don't want any more taxes, and they're not willing to listen to the specific arguments as much as in off November ballot times. However, I know you say, well, only the teachers of the district or administrators vote in those other elections, and people forget about them and don't know they're going to happen. Well, that's not the case here in Dearborn. We can tell everybody about it on August 5th. How many people will be out of town August 5th? I don't know. But, I mean, to get more people to vote, they could do a whole bunch of other things, like why not have it on Sundays? Why not make it an official holiday? You know, nobody could even work. Imagine, that'd be terrible. Business would crash.
Mm.
But, you know, it's done that way in other countries, and they have a lot more people voting. So
I think it's important, but I know that this is just finished with the story about the DPS and the millage renewal.
Well, one thing in the story, though, Dennis, is that we don't really know what those are about. So somebody who doesn't want to pay him says, wait a minute, what is a hold harmless? What the hell does that mean? Is that an insurance policy if somebody sues us? And the second one is a non-homestead mill of 18 mills. So I guess those are just general amounts of money, but what is home hardless and hold harmless, and what is non-homestead? Well, we'll have Whiston or Musson or somebody on to explain that here on this show, of course. But the simple fact is, folks, it's either got to be August or it has to be November. And there won't be a second chance to get the case out if it's in November, and the odds are in November, a lot of people, although not always people in Dearborn, they've been very good at supporting their fine schools to keep them going,
sure,
as well as they are, anyway, and don't let them get any worse. The same with Henry Ford Community College.
But the most important aspect mm-hmm. of this article, and it should be in the headline in my opinion, sorry, Bob, but these are renewals. This is not a tax increase for anyone. You will not see an increase.
Well, renewal, it does at the end of the headline, at least my headline in the paper.
Okay, and this is according to Whiston, and I mean, this is $38 million for the district, and he says without it, it would be devastating.
Yes, 22% of their budget, so I think that's about the amount of money that personal property tax.
The non-homestead is actually a business tax. It's for the businesses in the community, not the residents, so that's easy to pass.
Okay, a couple other things from the last Sunday's Pressing Guide, though, going back to the order here. Dearborn High School.
Sorry about that.
No, Dearborn High School Choir is going to be allowed to sing at the Vatican City during one of their services.
Not Vatican, Indiana.
Ceremonies. No, this is in, you know, that little island off from Italy.
That's right.
Rome, where the Pope lives.
Hey!
I just read a book about Pope Francis. It was his first interview, which they turned into a book, for the Catholic American magazine called America.
Cool.
And it was one of the Society of Jesuits priest that did the interview, and then it was done in Italian. It was translated by five different people, and was approved by the Pope finally as a good translation. It's the first time there was like an informal, not an informal, but a, you know, talk to him, he'll talk to you. Publication with a Pope for like 20 years or so. I mean, the Pope would get out and read the encyclicas or statements or give a homily. But it wouldn't just talk to anybody, okay? Wouldn't talk to an interviewer. And in case, you know, I know Barbara Walters is probably going to go over there now and try to get an interview. But this book was done lovingly, and Society of Jesuits, who Pope Francis is a part of, is primarily the ones that organized it and got it set up. And it's a very good chance for him to explain at length in his own words, although, you know, maybe slightly tweaked and edited after the fact, but in his own words, what he believes and why he does what he does and what he's trying to do. And he admitted, and I underlined this, that he is trying to make waves.
Oh, no kidding.
Just like WHFR, yeah. Making waves. I think, oh, the Pope is right in there with WHFR.
Are you sure? You got something waves. Wrong in that translation.
I think they might have translated a little mistakenly. But he says, I know people see me as trying to be making waves, and I am. I'm trying to do it for everybody, for all the people of the world, the sinners, and he calls himself a sinner who did get the attention of God in order to allow him to be in this position of power, if you will, and to guide the church, as he puts it, as you would lead the flock, and so on. There's always that shepherd.
Yeah, I have to. I spoke with an old Catholic that came out wrong. Somebody that's been Catholic for a lot of years, and I asked their opinion on the current Pope.
Yeah, we brought this up a couple stories locally here on the show.
Breath of fresh air. That's what I heard. Yeah. Breath of fresh air. Mm-hmm. It's a newness. It's something that people embrace.
Right. And I want to just mention, wherever the...
Were you looking for the Vatican story?
Yeah, 9A it says. Okay, I just want one page too many. You can hear the pages turning on the show.
Yeah.
No other news show.
Those aren't sound effects.
The reason I mention is because, of course, Dearborn High School is a nonprofit. No, Dearborn High School isn't, and the Dearborn Public Schools don't have the money to send these 30 students and 12 parents to Rome for this once-in-a-lifetime 8-day trip. I don't know, are they singing for 8 days?
I'm sure they're going to get some sleep.
Well, there's time to fly over and back. But the cost of the trip is approximately $4,300 per person.
Hey, maybe we shouldn't have followed the story about the millage renewal with this one.
This is because, I guess, the West Dearborn kids can afford it. No, they can't afford it. That's $4,300 per person, but that includes all transportation, lodging, and 2 meals a day. Oh, they don't get the third meal.
Well, and they just eat 2 big, long ones.
There should be some pizza in Italy, right?
You would think.
Somewhere spaghetti. On the street corner. Probably not in Vatican City, though. can't imagine there'd be Vatican pizza for sale from a vendor.
Hey, with the new Pope, you never know.
I wanted to mention that they're having fundraising, of course, you know, and here at Henry Ford Community College, we've had some of our choirs, our bands, and, you know, they do special fundraising in order to make these things possible, and it's great for the kids. It's once in a lifetime, probably, sort of event for them, and a great honor to be allowed to sing as part of one of the services. So in May, the choir will be performing a special Bon Voyage concert. That is, if they do get to go on a good trip to the Vatican at the Ford Community Performing Arts Center in Dearborn. So look forward to that sometime in May. But even this month, there's two unique fundraisers. On Saturday, that's tomorrow, folks, the Dearborn High Singers are hosting Italian Night, featuring an Italian dinner complete with dessert and entertainment by Dearborn High Singers at the Knights of Columbus Hall.
All right.
On Park Street in West Dearborn. Nice venue, by the way. And tickets are only $10, so it's a complete Italian dinner. Probably a lot of spaghetti, of course.
Good thing.
Right. But include with dessert, and they're going to sing for you, too. What a nice way to... a nice little event for a local group to help them for this big-time trip. So with 30 people going and 12 parents, that's 42 people. Can you multiply times $4,300?
Wow. A lot.
$160,000.
That's a lot of pizza.
That's a lot of $10 tickets. Well, also on January 27th, and that's Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Monday. Not typically a day you go out. But Leo's Coney Island, located at 5575 Greenfield Road in Dearborn. I think that's the one that's Greenfield and Ford Road. I think that's the one that's up there. We'll be donating a portion of their profits from food and drinks sold between 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. And so, I don't know, big percentage there, but if you want to go to a Coney, maybe Leo's up there at 5575 Greenfield Road. There's a Coney by me, and I think it's Kirby's that's at Greenfield Senate. And Outer Drive. Oh, it's a Senate.
By you.
It's three different types, yeah. Leo's, I think, is at Greenfield and Ford Road.
By the Target.
Yeah.
It's where the old Baker Square used to be.
Yes, it's the former Baker Square, right in the corner there.
Right around there.
So that would help them. Otherwise, you could contact... you can just send them money. Carmella Atkins is the woman's name, care of Dearborn High School Vocal Music Department, Dearborn High School, Dearborn, and probably get there. And you can call them. There's also a Facebook page. You can like it. It's the Dearborn Choir. Facebook page is, look for facebook.com/Dearborn Choir, and more information there about their fundraisers. But a nice honor, and not everybody gets chosen, I guess. Don't they say that in the church?
Oh, boy.
Okay.
Nice. That was actually very funny.
Yeah, well. Now it's time to go to somebody that's not quite so funny, but serious. We're going to go to Jim Hightower now. I can't top that for a while. So
no, that was really good.
Okay. Jim Hightower has got a couple comments here that are about millionaires. Yeah. Millionaire lawmakers. Wow. Most of our Congress in the United States are millionaires. Just like you and me. Yeah. And they understand us so well, don't they? Well, here's back-to-back two spots about millionaire lawmakers from Jim Hightower through commentaries from this week and the Millionaires Congress. Take a close listen. We'll be back with more Dearborn Journal local stories after these very important comments. Listen up.
Mark Twain spoke for me when he said, "I'm opposed to millionaires, but it would be dangerous to offer me the position." One danger that such wealth brings is that many who have it become blinded to those who don't. Thus, the news that more than half of our Congress critters are now in the millionaire class helps explain why it has been striving ceaselessly to provide more government giveaways to Wall Street bankers and other super wealthy elites, while also striving to enact government takeaways from middle class and poor families. Take the richest House member, Representative Darrell Issa, with a net worth of $464 million. A right-wing California Republican, he's used his legislative powers to try denying health coverage to poor Americans, even as he tried to unravel the new restraints to keep Wall Street bankers from wrecking our economy again. Issa and his ilk are proof that a lawmaker's net worth is strictly a financial measure, not any indication at all of one's actual value or worthiness. I hasten to note that many millionaires in America have been able to rise above their financial handicap, serving the public interest rather than self or special interests. For example, when Representative Shelley Pingree was elected to Congress in 2009, she was an organic farmer and innkeeper in rural Maine. Definitely not a millionaire, she was a stalwart fighter for such progressive policies as getting corporate money out of politics, enacting Medicare for all, and reining in Wall Street greed. But in 2011, Pingree married, of all people, a Wall Street financier, and was suddenly vaulted into the ranks of the one percenters. So naturally, her legislative positions changed, not one whit. This is Jim Hightower saying, see, even in Congress, being a millionaire is no excuse for becoming a narcissistic jerk. Siding with plutocrats is not an incurable condition, it's a choice.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
The rich truly are different from you and me. They tend to become Congress critters. You don't find many plumbers, mine workers, dirt farmers, Walmart associates, beauty parlor operators, taxi drivers, or other get-the-job-done Americans among the 535 members of the U.S. House and Senate. What you do find is an oversupply of lawmakers drawn from a very thin strata of America's population, millionaires. The Center for Responsive Politics reports that last year, for the first time in history, more than half of our senators and House members are in the Millionaires Club. Indeed, the average net worth, the value of what they own minus what they owe, for all lawmakers now totals more than $7 million each. The world in which our representatives live is light years from where the majority of people live, and the divide between the governors and the governees is especially stark for the 40% of people whose net worth is zero, or technically less than zero, since their income and other assets are far exceeded by their debts. This widening chasm is not just a matter of wealth, but most significantly, a literal separation of the privileged few from the experiences, needs, and aspirations of the many, who are struggling to make ends meet and worried that opportunities for their children to get ahead are no longer available to them. This is Jim Hightower saying, the harsh reality is that most Americans are no longer represented in Washington. Chances are that their own members of Congress don't know any struggling and worried people, share nothing in common with them, and can't relate to their real-life needs. Thus, Congress is content to play ideological games with such basics as health care, minimum wage, joblessness, food stamps, and Social Security. America's wealth divide has become a chasm, creating a looming social and political crisis for America that undermines any pretense that ours is a democratic society.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit hightowerlowdown.org.
Welcome back to the new WHFR Journal, actually back to the live in Dearborn, hosted by Dennis and Jay portion of the show.
Did you ever say the date, Friday, January 24th?
I did.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah,
I
Friday,
really
January 24th, 2014. I think I said it twice at the beginning of the hour. Unbelievable. So responsible as broadcasters here. So here's my report. I went down Tuesday, the 21st of January, to the auto show. And I did something different. Rather than parking at Joe Louis Arena, which is the only place that you usually get in after waiting for 20 minutes to even get off the street and in the building, and then having a 15 to 20 minute cold walk to Cobo Arena facing me, and of course these days it's very cold, but it's pretty much always cold in Detroit in January, I decided to, and oh, by the way, folks, I looked this up on the internet, most of the major car parks in the close vicinity of Cobo are $15 a car. That's what they charge all day, $15. Whoa. And of course Cobo Arena has got four lots, but one is closed for repairs, and the roof is always filled by 8 a.m. in the morning, I know. And some of these lots, like people say, oh, go park in Greektown Casino lot. Yeah, well, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. every morning, it's reserved for people that have special passes. The big gamblers, they have special passes, and they can park their car, they can bring it in between 6 a.m. and 10 a.m., but ordinary people can't, but I got an idea, because they said, oh, you can ride the people mover from Greektown, and that's all sort of indoors. You wouldn't be walking outside. So I looked around, and it turns out that Grand Circus Park, and you say, well, that's not really close to downtown. No, but their underground parking is only $5 a car. Not $10, $5. And they have a people mover stop that just come out of the underground, and it's just across the corner, across Woodward, to get into it. So that's 75 cents each way. So with that plan, it's only $6.50 for parking and the people mover transit to get in there. So that was a good idea. I'm glad I did that, because and it didn't take that long. You say, well, people mover, you're going to wait a long time. No, it's not like waiting for a Detroit bus, folks.
No, it's not.
No, it's like every 5 minutes, it seemed like. Yeah. They really had a lot of
more like the subway
cars. Although it's true, Dennis, I know they had some downtime for maintenance reasons. But And speaking of maintenance, downtown Detroit is a mess. From my people mover seat going down to Cobo Hall and then back up, because it's a circular thing. You know, you go clockwise around the city of Detroit to all the different stops. So I got a chance to see a lot of the downtown area. And, it's I feel like Brooks Patterson. It's a mess. It's, even the Grand Circus parking underground lot. The doors are falling off the hinges. The locks are broken and supplemented with chains. Sure, they're all dirty. Nobody's ever cleaned a window or swept anything up. Almost all the streets are that way. And so many buildings that are vacant in that area, too. A few are brand spanking new with businesses I've never heard of. And good luck to them.
Yeah.
Because the whole total area is in pretty bad shape. Now, on the people mover, there was actually a lot of tourists riding it. Where? Because they want to go to the auto show.
Sure.
And they were reading from tourist books, oh, we can see this, we can see that. And then other people who are riding with them from Detroit, now that closed. That's not open anymore.
No, that one moved
that
out of
burned
state.
Up. So I didn't say anything. I'm just, oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know, at least they're not looking out. They're reading their books. They're not looking out the windows of the people mover to see how it looks like a war zone, except there's no war going on. But, I mean, it's the remains of some bombs that went off or something. And, of course, it's such an extreme difference. If you were living and working in Detroit, you would sort of take that look for granted to a certain extent. But by comparison with Dearborn, oh, my gosh, we've got such a clean, well-maintained city. And we're talking about downtown Detroit. I'm not even talking about some of the outlying areas, you know. So Detroit's, well, of course, they're in bankruptcy. They got some, I mean, it's not illogical that they're not going to be very well maintained or have a lot of business going on. And a few people are struggling to start new businesses. But, well, okay, moving to the auto show. So I suggest parking for only $5 a car and riding the people mover to Cobo at 75 cents each way. First problem I had is that, there's about 50 new cars. And there's a story in, I think, Press and Guide Wednesday, if you want to look at it, Dennis, stare at the pictures there. I can't show pictures over the show, but the point is that 50 new concept cars. Well, that's nice to look at. Oh, look at that pretty concept car. Except guess what? You can't buy them. You can't buy them now. And you probably won't be able to buy them ever because they're a concept car. I mean, maybe someday something will be released, like the Dodge Viper was a concept car at one point, and now it's the SRT Viper. They have that new sports car division in Chrysler called SRT. And so the Viper is now an SRT Viper. But I'm saying that became a real car, and it does happen. Maybe once in 100 concept cars, they'll actually in a few years have a real car that you could buy. Of course, most people can't afford a $120,000 SRT Viper. So it's not like everybody's car. Most of the concept cars are not for inexpensive cars of the future. They're for very, very, very expensive cars in the future that almost no one could afford, even if they weren't made like the concept, which nobody could afford anyway.
But that's the point, though, is to show the people.
It's a dream.
It is, exactly. And people go to see it knowing they'll never be able to afford it.
And it's never going to happen.
Right.
So
that's okay, though.
Yeah. But there's actually very few new actual cars, what I call, of merit. And I'm a car person. Let me just say I brought in my four-car magazine. I subscribe to all the automobile magazines. I even get emails from the top four as well as Green Car Reports every day. Wow. And I just qualified for Automotive News, which is sort of like insider business news for cars every day as a journalist. I qualified, and I don't even think I want to know all that stuff. No. But the point is, I have kept up with this. It's one of my special little interests on the side, and I have to say, I didn't see any brand new actual cars of merit. There were a few introduced, like the Chrysler 200 is brand new, new look, small sedan, family type vehicle. Nothing too sporty, but it's got some good basics there, so maybe that'll work for Chrysler, I don't know. In terms of concept cars, okay. I did like the Kia GT4 Stinger, and that's a two-seat sports car. I might liken it to a Nissan Z car, like the 350Z or 370Z that they have now, and it was in gold, which is often a the color of a Nissan 370Z. I think it comes in gold also. But it's not going to happen for a while. But it would make Kia more than just the average person's automotive company for cars, that this would be a sports car. This would be a two-seat, good-handling, high-style sports car. And if it's Kia, it's probably not going to be real expensive.
Right. And the Kia is always based on being value and mm-hmm. being no-nonsense, I think,
yeah.
too.
But there's no way to tell what if it ever will get produced in that sort of with that sort of look, which I thought was great, what the mechanicals are going to be, what is the engine, what performance, you know, we don't know. Audi and Mazda do get my award for the best car companies overall in terms of all their car lines. Audi has introduced a lot smaller cars, the A3 and the G3, Q3. Q3 is their small SUV. And the A3, they've redesigned. It used to be just a small wagon, economical car. And they had a concept. So I'm just saying I loved all the Mazdas and I loved all the Audis, almost all of them in their model lines, even though I know some Audis are very expensive.
True.
Audi showed a concept car called the All-Road Shooting Brake. Do you know what a shooting brake is, Dennis?
No, I don't know.
Not that much of a car guy. Shooting brake.
Less than that, even.
is a hatchback.
Okay.
And, of course, wouldn't you know, I love hatchbacks. And the U.S. car manufacturers believe, and even foreign car manufacturers, Americans won't buy hatchbacks. You know, the Ford Mustang used to be a hatchback.
Mm-hmm.
The Boss Mach 1 from 20 years ago, 30 years ago, that was a hatchback. In other words, the back seat flows into the trunk, okay? It's not closed off. The trunk is not separate. You fold down the seat, you got a long storage area. Europeans love hatchbacks because with small families, they need the storage at times to go on trips and other things. So they just fold down the back seats and they got like a mini station wagon.
I just thought it was just strictly for when you go to the drive-in. You can just open the back hatch and
put your sleeping bag in there,
sure,
or something.
I'm sure you've done that. Well, we should tell people.
A Shooting Brake is a hatchback, and it's a two-door, and Ferrari just put out a Shooting Brake, which is fantastic, a four-wheel drive Ferrari, well, it was a couple of years ago. And so I love the Shooting Brake style, and this was a two-door, four-wheel drive, but not a SUV from Audi. Called the Shooting Brake. But will it come to this country? Again, people believe Americans won't buy hatchbacks, and it's just so crazy. Even Subaru had a WRX, which is a sports car of theirs, and they had a hatchback, or you could have a dumpy sedan style, okay? Same engine performance. They dumped the hatchback. I guess nobody was buying it. It was a five-door hatchback. It was fantastic. Just like the Ford Focus has a five-door hatchback. I love that look. But some people, I don't like that look. I want a sedan. Okay, fine with you. To each their own. But why there's this belief that Americans won't buy hatchbacks? Give us a hatchback. And the other thing is Americans won't buy station wagons. Hmm. Did you ever hear that one, Dennis?
Well,
Audi has one, and BMW has a small one too. But Audi has an all-road, which is they made it a little bit bigger and better. It's not just a station wagon. They have, I think, an A4 station wagon. But this is actually actually better and a little bit bigger, but it's low to the ground, so it's good handling. I mean, it's like a regular sedan height above the ground, but it's got four-wheel drive. It was beautiful. They've subtly changed the rear part of it.
Is it wide?
A little bit wider. Like Volkswagen has a Jetta station wagon.
The Ford Flex, is it not that wide?
I just liked it. It's just styled nice enough to be attractive as a station wagon.
Did it have wood paneling on the sides?
It wasn't a Woody. No.
Griswold, family truckster.
But that's the concept cars. I thought it was unfortunate that there was no special attention, like special area or section, even among the car companies themselves, for green cars.
What did they do? Just kind of.
Or hybrids. They were just
integrate all everything.
Hey, where's your hybrid? Oh, it's three over. Is it? It looks just, it looks just like a Fusion. It looks just like a Focus. Mm-hmm. No, that's the electric Focus. So, but nobody's making a big deal that they've got them or that you should buy them. And I think it's too bad.
Or it's really good and they don't feel the need anymore because people are jumping on. There's enough, no? You don't think so? Well, you'd know. This is your thing, your industry.
Well,
it just seems marketing-wise, if enough people are doing it, they're not
making
a big deal.
If you want to do the right thing and you want to get better gas economy, yes, maybe you should spend a little bit more money up front and get a hybrid, or if you're not going to drive very far, an all-electric car, go ahead, be the first on your block. It'd be very exciting. You can let little kids pay you 50 cents for a trip around the block in the car. You drive, but...
make sure you drive.
Get a little money on the side from giving test drives. You should do that. In fact, there's almost no doubt that in about 10 years, most people will be driving hybrids and electric cars.
Right.
Because you won't be able to afford the gas.
So maybe we turn the corner, no pun intended. That's how they're feeling marketing-wise. They don't need to.
Well, maybe people that want to do it, they'll find them, but they're not giving any special attention to them at the auto show. And I think one fact is, and this was admitted by Fiat about their electric car, which was on sale in California because of California pollution requirements. They said, it's just we're just doing it because of the law. We're losing money on it. The cost of the batteries is more than the cost we're selling the car for. But so we're just doing it for the sake of the fact of the law, and then maybe we'll make the profit from other cars. We'll sort of balance it out. So... that's unfortunate, but even Ford is saying, even at $40,000, we're losing money on that. And of course, Ford has had to match with their Ford Focus Electric, the Nissan Leaf Electric, lease price of $199 a month.
Seriously?
Can you imagine a $40,000 car retail for $199 a month for 3 years? And then, of course, you don't have to worry about the battery or whatever when it's dead in 4 or 5 years because you already got rid of it in 3 years. So
that's interesting because and I don't want to jump ahead and ruin the fun here, but you actually have the Nissan Leaf on your list of cars.
Oh, I've driven it. I think it's a fantastic car. It handles well. It's just, I couldn't have it for myself because the range is only about 80 miles at best.
Yeah, but you don't drive very much.
Right now, but there's always hope.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Always the dream.
Now
what about
talking.
That conference I want to go to in Lansing, 90 miles away? Never make it in the Leaf.
No.
We'd have to
stop in South Lyon.
We have to charge in South Lyon for 4 hours. Yeah,
that's right.
To make it the rest of the way. So I need about 200 miles.
Yeah.
Now, of course, somebody said, why don't you buy a Tesla? Oh, okay, $80,000. But he's got a great lease deal.
Yeah.
In fact, Elon Musk, that's his name, folks. the head of Tesla and the SpaceX program too, Elon Musk. Anyway, he's a super rich guy, but he said he thinks everybody in the future is going to lease a car, that nobody's ever going to buy one because they're just too expensive. And especially with electric cars and hybrids where there's these battery issues that you don't want to take a chance. And of course, if you don't drive a lot of miles, leasing is fantastic.
Well, he means new cars though, brand new. Used cars will always sell.
Well, maybe, yeah.
No?
Don't
you think the dealerships are pushing more for leasing? They have been for years. I mean, it seems like it's a better model for them.
Well, if they're able to sell the car that they get back mm-hmm. for a decent price that you as a used car in mm-hmm. 2 or 3 years when it comes back on their lot, then they're all for leasing.
That's what I mean. The model
they can make profit on the lease, but they also make profit on the resale because the car comes back to them usually mm-hmm. where it was leased from.
Exactly.
Not always, but usually. So yeah, they like that. But Ford like got in trouble. They were leasing for only 2 years.
Yeah.
For a while. That's when I had my Ford Taurus shows back in the 90s. And what a fantastic deal. 2 years in a brand new car. Well, they were losing too much money.
Right.
And nobody really wanted the show when they realized to buy it outright because the tune-ups cost then $200
wow.
an engine because they're high-performance Yamaha engines.
Oil changes.
V6 Yamahas in these Fords. And and the but under warranty, hey. Go for it, you know. Well, okay. And, okay, so my cars of merit here, just going down the list, sure, Chevrolet Corvette. I don't see the style as functional, but it's a heck of a sports car. For $50,000 starting price, $55,000, there's nothing that outperforms that two-seat car. Okay, but don't drive it in bad weather. It's a rear-wheel drive. It wouldn't be good in Michigan winter. But for what it is, it's probably the highest performance, best not just fast, but best handling, best braking sports car in the world. And they showed down there a 2015 Corvette Z06, which would be, I think, about $120,000 or more. And they said, this will outperform any Ferrari or Porsche in the world. That's the 2015 special Corvette, the Z06.
That's what they said. I need it for a weekend.
Oh, well, it's already been test driven, and we'll give it to Dennis
for a
weekend.
You know me. I don't believe what I hear. I have to do it myself.
Now, they didn't make anything in the Chevy exhibit of this, but they have the Cruze, which is a small sedan, mm-hmm. and it handles pretty well, and a pretty decent car.
Popular car.
They've got a diesel. It gets 48 miles to a gallon.
Wow.
48 miles a gallon, and it's a peppy one. It's not a slow one. That's a problem I had with BMW. I was going to get another BMW this year after my lease ran out on my BMW I had, and I was going to get a smaller car. But what do they put? They put the smaller, dinky diesel in it for U.S. buyers, not the high-performance diesel that they had in Europe, which was the only one you could get in Europe. Those Europeans really want, you know, a car that's peppy. And so it's ridiculous. I'm not going to pay more money for a car that's a weak puppy here, you know. But the Chevy Cruze diesel, I haven't driven it, but if you got to have a Chevy, I'm just saying, look at the Cruze, that's Cruze, and look about how much the diesel might cost extra. It's a heck of a car. Ford Mustang 2015, have you seen them, Dennis?
I have not, no.
Oh, well, to me, they look just like the 2014.
Oh.
They're a little bit more,
I have seen it.
A little more highly styled. Okay, but they didn't want to get too radical. But it's now a world car. In England, they can, for the first time, buy a Mustang that has right-hand drive.
Hmm.
So the British will finally be able to buy a real Mustang, not just a super Ford Focus.
Right. Well, I'm sure they're excited.
And, of course, I mentioned the Audi Allroad, which is their fantastic station wagon. That's about $40,000 or $50,000, though, the Leaf. Even though it's destined to be replaced in about a year, the two-seat Mazda Miata MX-5 sports car is just fantastic little car. It's been on
little, too, isn't it?
Car and Driver, Automobile Magazine, Road and Track, best cars of the year. Just it handles so well, and decent gas economy. It could be better. The next engine will be a Skyactiv engine in it, and like they have in the other Mazdas, which are really good, but they haven't done anything with that really except put on some special trim packages. But nice little fun little car, you know. The Mazda CX-5 I drove this year, it's their small SUV. It is unbelievably fantastic. Didn't have a manual transmission. That was the holdback for me. But it's a fantastic small SUV. Mazda 3, I was waiting for the GT package with manual transmission. That's a small hatchback. You can get it in a sedan, I think, too. But the hatchback Mazda, it's fantastic looking, great economy car. SRT Viper. I took some pictures. I'll show you next week. I don't have them back, Dennis, but I'm actually printing them out.
Yeah, I was going to say.
The SRT Viper has got a silver finish, the one at the auto show. It's a matte silver. It glows. It seems to glow in the dark. I mean, it's just, it is so beautiful. And the rear tail lights, that 120,000, you know, two-seat sports car. But, of course, the Porsche Boxster, Porsche Cayman, I love those two-seat cars. You know, if I could afford them, they start around 55,000. BMW X1, the small SUV, if they only had that big diesel in there. Dodge Challenger. Well, I put that on my list because I know it's an old muscle car. But this year, oh, my God, my heart was beating fast. They've got a shaker hood now. You know what that is? The engine actually has, there's a hole in the hood. And they've got an air intake for the engine sticking out of the hood.
Okay.
And when you turn the engine on, it shakes. You can see it vibrating back and forth, the air intake. So they call it a shaker hood.
And why is that significant?
Because you can get more air pushed into the engine. You would have better acceleration.
The shaking does it?
No, it's because it's not, the air intake is not hiding under the hood. Mm-hmm. It's actually out above the hood.
Okay. Well, I mean, you just seem to get real excited about the thing shaking, and to me, I'd be like, well, that's annoying. I'm trying to drive.
I said it's a nostalgia thing from the 60s,
okay.
You know.
Oh, okay.
And it's cool they did that, because today there's no carburetors as such. They're all fuel-injected anyway, so the air could be coming anywhere pretty much. It'll all be pushed in there. They're turbocharged, I think, anyway, the Hemi, right? And they had... I could say the Challenger has a beautiful body, but it was the model that was next to the car. Yeah. I mean, okay, Chrysler is owned by Fiat now, totally.
Sure.
And when Marcioni first bought a portion of it for the first auto show where Fiat was part of Chrysler a couple years ago, they had the most beautiful models. I think they flew them in from Italy.
Really?
I mean, Italian movie stars, I thought. I mean, and they have the best. So my award to best models.
Oh, geez.
Goes to Chrysler Corporation, so take a look at that. Jeep Cherokee is a new model of their company. I probably would have bought one of those this year, but they had a little delay on their transmission coming out of the factory this fall, and it just wasn't available when I needed a car. So, And the 2015 Honda Fit. Now, everybody from the Car Talk guys from years ago that used to be on PBS have said that is the most economical, and they made it, they gave, get this, 4 inches more leg room for rear seat passengers. I thought it was cavernous before, but nope. You know, so Honda Fit, it'll be out later this summer as a 2015 model. I think there's going to be a hybrid, but don't count on it, okay? But a very economical, well-made car, great design, not a sports car, but what the heck. Cobo Center renovations, great new food vendors down there. Natural food. They actually had signs up, natural food.
Really?
Compared to these other vendors, and who knows what kind of food that was, artificial. But it was about, anywhere from $6 to $10 a sandwich. And I just go to my local Coney here in Dearborn, I guess. but I understand, like, sandwiches, hot dogs at, like, ballparks and that are, what, $15 at a football game or something?
No, not that much.
No?
But they're pricey. No, that's how much it is for a beer.
Yeah.
But for, a sandwich, hot dogs, you know, $4.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, that's my report on the North American International Auto
Show.
Sounds
like you had fun. You know what I love about your reports?
It was fun.
The thing that impresses me most, because cars, whatever. I get excited about sports and you don't. So
I forgot to mention that you can see this at Greenfield Village, too. They actually borrowed the very first 1960 Ford Mustang convertible. The first one, model serial number one, was down there. It actually was bought by a pilot who lived in New Zealand, but Ford has bought it back now. But it's still got the Newfoundland. I say New Zealand. No, Newfoundland up in Canada.
Right.
Canadian bought it. They bought it back, and it's in the Henry Ford Museum. Also, the Mustang concept car, which was just called the Mustang One Concept, was also down there, polished up. I don't remember it ever being that shiny at Henry
One
Ford Museum.
Concept?
But it's at the...
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. It's at the, it's right there at Henry Ford Museum as soon as they get done with it at the auto show. So you can see those over at the Ford Museum.
What I was saying before you picked these photos out is what I love about your report is that you give the parking, the price. So if anybody, I mean, people still have until what, Sunday to go down there?
Yeah, as I said, through Sunday at 6 p.m. entrance.
Mm-hmm. So listen to this podcast and you'll know exactly where to park and what to see.
Yeah, not a lot of time before Joanne and Highway 61 comes in. This is WHFR Dearborn, don't you know? And we have a couple minutes left officially in our show. But we wanted to look at Craig Foran's editorial about what to do about the state surplus. And take a look at this on from Wednesday Press and Guide. He says, hello, Dearborn, Dearborn Heights. Now it gets interesting. What to do with nearly $1 billion, that's with a B, budget surplus this coming fiscal year, and that's here in the state of Michigan. You could just feel the juices flowing in Lansing recently. Nearly every lawmaker was salivating at the chance to issue checks to Michigan voters in time for this fall's elections. It was Governor Snyder's State of the State address, and he eventually got to the spot everyone was waiting for, what to do with the money. It's not about politics, the governor said. It's about being a family. I believe, though, he continued, when I've looked at that list of options, there's going to be an opportunity for some tax relief. Unquote. At that point, Lansing rumbled with the applause and foot stomping of kids just given another snow day. It was like a fix to an addict, the lubricant of politics, money, and I should say, especially in election year. I mean, you always want that to campaign on if you're already an incumbent. I lowered your taxes. Yeah, okay, that was my addition here. He says, to convince all of us, says Craig, that all is well with the world, that our saviors will make us financially whole. Oh, and don't forget to vote for these wonderful people who just gave you your money back, as I said. Of course, this typically political move conveniently ignores the facts that these same lawmakers saw no problem taking the money from us in the first place. I'll just go down the list, considering the following. The GOP-controlled legislature felt it was important to tax retirement income on those born after 1946, the baby boomers. And, well, that was me. Of course,
yeah.
I was born in 46.
46, so, yeah. There you go.
I'll take offense. They had to draw the line right at me. Well, Kornick, you've got to tax him. Yeah,
they did it on purpose.
But all of public pensions in Michigan, how much? 10%. Okay, not quite so much in those first 5 years from 46 to 51, but I think 5% we got. We got some little, they negotiate a little. But I'm still mad. I mean, 5% of my annual pay, 10% for everybody else? I want it back. I was promised that. I retired expecting that. And all of a sudden, you take it away from me 1 year after I retired? Okay. They also felt it was important to take away the homestead property tax credit from more than 400,000 Michigan families, and you wouldn't qualify for that unless you really needed the credit. I mean, we're talking about income eligible, as
exactly.
They say, which is the lower income people.
Right, it's pretty low income, too.
Right. So cut out that for the poor people. They don't need any help. They cut the earned income tax credit, from 20% of the federal EITC, whatever that is, to a mere 6%. That's a tremendous hit, by the way, to working families. They eliminated the $600 per child deduction. So the more kids you have, the more deductions, okay? Took it away. Boom. They eliminated the deduction for charitable donations. So if you're charitable, even if you're a poor person, you'd like to get a little rebate on your taxes. Nope. And then they gave $2 billion, there's that B word again, tax break to Michigan businesses. Has that really helped get a lot of jobs in Michigan? Maybe a few. I don't know how many. Not many. The shorthand, says Craig Foran, they took money from breathing human beings and gave it to corporate creatures that are more and more being defined as people, quote unquote, too. Using his State of the State as a campaign kickoff event, Snyder spent most of his time talking about all the great things going on, reciting one mind-numbing statistic after another. In fact, it wasn't until about 45 minutes into his stump speech that he even began talking about anything remotely important to the future of Michigan. By the way, he wasn't using a teleprompter. I thought he was trying to outdo Bill Clinton's record of State of the Union addresses, but no.
Just off the top of his head?
He had some written little note cards.
Oh, okay.
But he went off, just saying whatever he wanted to. Yeah, introducing his daughter and what she did in high school, one of his daughters.
Well, if you needed cards for that, we have problems. Yeah.
And it says here, Craig is completing this, and we're going to get to Highway 61 in just 1 minute. Never mind that State Budget Director John Nixon has said that about $650 million in surplus shouldn't be used for any kind of permanent tax